You're listening to Engage with Andy Bush. To connect with the program today, please send an email to andrew.bush@comcast.net. That's andrew.bush@comcast.net. Now, back to this week's program.
Welcome back to Engage with Andy Bush and our monthly nonprofit show. This show can be found on iTunes by downloading the free podcast app and searching for Engage with Andy Bush. The show appears on Voice America and andrewbush.com. For more information about all the nonprofits we discuss on this week's show, please go to andrewbush.com. Now, in this segment, we are joined by Paul Irving from the Milken Institute. Mr. Irving is the chairman at the Center for the Future of Aging. Paul, welcome back to Engage.
Thanks, Andy.
Well, Paul, tell us about the Milken Institute Center for the Future of Aging. What is your mission here, and what are you trying to accomplish?
Well, Sweeney, you know, I was formerly the Institute's president, and we started working on a project on older populations, and I realized the magnitude both of the challenge and the opportunity. As you know, 10,000 people or so are turning a day, 65 a day in the United States. We're a rapidly aging society, but societies are aging even more rapidly in other parts of the world, in Europe and in Japan, which is the oldest large developed country in the world, in China. So this phenomenon of lower birth rates and increasing longevity really means that lives are changing in ways that we really couldn't have anticipated a generation or two ago. In fact, in the last 150 years or so, lifespans have doubled. So all the social norms, all the conventions that we've grown up with, that we've understood as parts of our lives, have changed. So I got really interested in this, and I thought to myself, it's time to challenge conventional wisdom. And we know that that population aging represents significant health challenges and financial challenges and social challenges, but there are a lot of exciting and very positive developments. Traditional retirement being reimagined, and a longevity economy being created, and new ways for people to think about their lives. And by the way, not just for people who are aging, but very much for our kids and our grandkids as well. So I can talk more about it, but It's a really exciting area that I think is as significant in the human world as climate change is, in a sense, in the physical world. It's going to change all of our lives forever.
Well, Paul, you know, with the baby boomers being that large group, that large generation going through, and there being 78 million, you know, what could you give us a couple of examples of specific changes we're seeing in society with them aging, and me being the generation behind and coming up behind them, what will I see different in society because of them living longer?
Shirley said, by the way, the baby boomers are no longer the largest generation. They're 83, 84 million millennials. So you're in the middle generation.
I squeezed on both sides then.
A relatively small generation. I just actually wrote a piece asking millennials how they'll live their lives if they end up living to more than 100 years. I mean, you know, again, that people are living longer, but longevity scientists, Google recently funded a new business called Calico, run by Art Levinson, who's the chairman of Apple Computer and was the former CEO of Genentech, focused on increasing longevity. There's a Palo Alto Longevity Prize. Folks like Craig Venter in San Diego, working hard, who was one of the fathers of the Human Genome Project, working hard on changing lives. So there's so many medical advances that we're likely to see at least some life extension. And the real question is not will lives continue to lengthen, but what are we going to do about it? What's the purpose of these additional years, and how are we going to fill those years in meaningful ways? So the retirement dreams of prior generations, which often tended to be kind of a move to Florida, maybe to a coastal place with a rec center and a shuffleboard court and a cafeteria, and kind of sitting around waiting to die, really does not represent the aspiration of most baby boomers. AARP says that about 90% of people going forward will want to age in place and at home. And so what it means is a new way to think about our cities. It means a new way to think about work and kind of multiple careers as we continue to have these longer lives, returning to school to refresh skills. Again, you know, new consumer markets, because older people today don't shun good design or creative ideas or interesting travel. So there's so many opportunities to take advantage of these additional years that science has given us, but we're really just beginning to figure out what to do about all that.
Well, through the work at the center, you promote healthy and productive and purposeful aging, and I love the sound of that, purposeful aging, because as I'm getting older, that's what I want to do. I definitely want to be more purposeful. And I understand, as you just mentioned, the increase in the skill sets. I think that's something that everyone has to continue to do. But specifically, I mean, for the center, you know, what does this mean and how do you promote this, Paul? Because I think that'll be very helpful for the audience to understand.
Yeah, so look, there are really kind of five things that we're focused on. And this is in the context of an institute with a mission to improve access to capital, create jobs, improve health, et cetera. So our focus is there's a high level focus, which is to change the perception of older adults in policy and media and business and other domains. We tend to either dismiss older people or trivialize older people, and obviously this in no way dismisses the important challenges of aging, physical challenges and other challenges. But older people are a human capital resource that are under appreciated and under engaged, and we think that requires a new narrative, a new public narrative about the potential of older people, and we're focused on that. We're interested in promoting policies and practices to enable lifelong productivity and engagement, to address ageism, to create work environments that are intergenerational, which, by the way, are demonstrably more successful than work environments that are one generation. So the power of intergenerational teams and the opportunity to take advantage of the skills of people at all ages is something that we're interested in promoting. We focus, Andy, you know, we have important relationships in the investment and business community, and
certainly.
And so we're very focused on making the case for investment and innovation in what we call the longevity economy, that is, new products and services for this growing aging cohort, not just in America but across the world, and whether this is digital medical advices or autonomous cars, ways that people will be able to live more effectively as they enjoy these longer lives, and of course this is a great opportunity for new business. I regularly say that, you know, economic growth occurs at the intersection of demographic change and innovation, and there is no more powerful intersection really in the world today than what's happening in aging. A rapidly aging population across the world, hungry for new products and services to address their needs. So it's a fantastic opportunity for business creation. We're really interested in this question of purpose. I'll come back to that in a second, but I would say the last piece is also encouraging prevention and wellness. We spend a relatively small amount of the federal health budget on the front end of the health spectrum. That's prevention and wellness, addressing issues like obesity, smoking, and other things that have a huge effect on people's health as they get older. And we would like to see more investment, more focus, more energy placed on preventing the disease as opposed to what we spend an awful lot of time discussing and debating, and that is treating it. And if we can simply defer the onset of difficult medical conditions, deal with things like the pandemic of diabetes, hugely affected by weight, we can have a healthier, happier, more productive older population. The purpose piece is really a recognition of two things. One purpose is good for you. In fact, you know, you're a Chicago guy, Andy, and Rush Medical Center in Chicago not too long ago did a study on the connection between purpose and mortality and morbidity, and they found out, guess what? people who define purpose in their lives as they get older live healthier and live longer.
Yeah.
And this study is one of many showing the connection between purpose and personal health, happiness, et cetera. But there's also something else, and that is that, you know, as we think about this massive number of people and the things that they can do, we also think that older people can be a force for good in society, a stabilizing force in young societies. If you took an introduction to psychology class when you were an undergraduate, you probably studied a guy named Eric Erickson who talked about generativity, which is this kind of inclination, natural reflex of older people to pass down, to mentor, to give back,
mm-hmm.
to younger people, and we think that older people can do so much to strengthen society and improve younger lives.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I know Lisa's got another question. I just wanted to say, you know, what is fascinating to me, and I know your work's cut out for you, because the way we look at aging and the way that we look at older people, we don't understand how much knowledge, skills, and experience can really be passed on. It's too often we spend as a society always focused on the young because, you know, I mean, clearly with sports and advertising, you know, where money is spent. But it's a shame because it creates this view that the younger are always so much better at what they do, and that's not the case, right? So I just wanted to make that little point, and I think go ahead, Lisa.
Yeah.
I know you got a question.
Well, I was going to say, Paul's speaking my language because, you know, having worked in the nonprofit field and knowing that people are healthier and happier, so the purposeful life, I love that. But, you know, those are really bold objectives and goals, Paul. How is the Milken Institute and how is your center specifically funded?
So we're a public charity, and we get money from a range of supporters, foundations, some foundation money, some individual supporters, and some corporate supporters. It's a range, and no one supporter dominates. There are various funders, Lisa, as you know, interested in different kinds of programs that we're involved in, and maybe interested in one or more of these specific objectives, be they health or jobs or purpose, et cetera. And that, you know, that's reflected in the nature of the work we do. So, for example, we do something that's been covered a lot, an analysis of the best cities in the United States for successful aging, where we evaluate 352 metro areas in the United States for a series of characteristics that we and a series of outside experts identify as being those things that are important to older people to improve their lives as they age. And we had support from a series of foundations on that. And we did a Mayor's Pledge campaign asking mayors across the country to pledge not only to improve conditions for older people, but also to call on older people and enable them to contribute back to their cities.
Right.
So there are a series of things that we do funded in different ways.
Well, that's great. Well, in just the minute or so that we got left, you know, Paul, let's have a little call to action here. What can people do to help or participate with the work that you guys are doing?
Well, so I think in terms of we're obviously a mission-driven organization, but I think in terms of their own lives, they can remain engaged. They can understand that as they age, they don't need to back away from society. In fact, very much as Sheryl Sandberg said in her book about women, it's time for older people to lean in and remain involved. These are discussions that should be had with not just older people, but with our kids, because our kids reflect the aging population of the future, and we need to establish new norms, new standards, new approaches for them to live their lives as they get old. And as I said, it's very, very likely that they'll be living longer lives. So, so this kind of traditional notion of beginning decline sometime in one's 50s or 60s makes absolutely no sense if one might have 20 or 30 or 40 more productive years ahead. You know, I think the message about older adults giving back and paying forward is obviously an extraordinarily important one, which, by the way, will have the effect of increasing respect for dignity of and interest in our aging population. Their contributions can do tremendous things to help society. And of course, there's the question of health. And I think, you know, it's more important than ever for people to think about how they can remain healthy, both for their own purposes and their families, but also to reduce burden on the broader society.
What a wonderful couple of points to end on. All right, Paul Irving from the Milken Center for the Future of Aging, thanks for coming on the show today.
Thanks, Andy. Thanks, Lisa.
All right, if you want more information on the Center for the Future of Aging, please go to the milkeninstitute.org, click on Centers, and then click on Center for the Future of Aging. Lisa, let's take a time out. You're listening to Engage in our monthly nonprofit show. I'm Andy Bush. We'll be right back.
We're making it easier to listen to the Voice America Talk Radio Network live wherever you go on iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android. Download it from the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.